Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case today, particularly information from the Way to Live book. On page 100 of the Way to Live book, there's a very interesting statement that is made. If a human being loses his slash her striving, then he slash she loses his sense of life. To strive means to make great efforts to achieve or obtain something. The creation itself, as well as all creatures and Wesenheiten, are imbued with the power of striving. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. So the way it kind of works here, from what I can see in the Meier information, we're supposed to reach that which is higher and more fully developed. And in order to reach these things, this comes from continual striving. So if you feel down, if you feel unmotivated, if you feel unhappy, it's very possible you need to push a little harder on your striving. In fact, I stumbled across some interesting information today called the Anti-Logos. And the concept comes from Billy's book called Propheten und Wahrsagen and the German Prophecies and Predictions. And the Anti-Logos is said to be the child of evil, the child of ruin, and is a deadly opponent against knowledge. So this whole concept of the anti-logos, I interpreted it as kind of an anti-striving mentality, which I think a lot of people have today. I think it hits all of us sometimes. In Askett's Explanations, Part 1, she said, "It is the task of each more highly developed life form to stand alongside less developed forms with help in responsible measure, to influence the evolution in the appropriate strength, and this obligation is incumbent on all life forms of all universes because it is a creational law." So Billy, as a universal prophet, has been incarnating to help speed up our evolution. And the Tao universe, our sister universe, of course, has its own universal prophet as well, which their incarnation helps speed up the evolution of all the folks in that universe. And one thing to remember, particularly the people on Earth are forming what's called a we form, where people are connected subconsciously. So just you learning this material is helping people subconsciously. If the human being can no longer strive for anything at all, then he or she will feel with deadly might that he or she is no longer of any use to anything. So this is very important. If you feel like you cannot strive, you really need to examine yourself. And sometimes in those cases, you just need to go work on something immediately to kind of get yourself back to a neutral, positive frame of mind. In Contact Report 38, the course of evolution belongs to the high and the highest forms of life, just as it does also to the low and lowest forms of life. This is a creational law of evolution, which possesses its validity for all times and never is subject to any kind of alterations. So what I've found is if you slack off on your striving, you tend to not feel so good. And there's something called Gewaltsamkeit, And this is a really negative feeling. Gewaltsamkeit is translated in certain German online dictionaries as violence, but I don't think this captures the full meaning. In the Figure Dictionary, Gewalt is said to be above all might and force, and it's very difficult to translate. But what this passage is saying is that if you stop striving, then it will be as if your own existence has been forfeited. And striving is the actual nature of a human being. However, if this nature is nullified, then he or she does not have a place in this world anymore. Rather, he or she has to vanish from it. So it's really a life and death thing to keep striving. The German word streben means to strive. And in the Goblet of Truth on page 35, it says, finding fulfillment through truth is, however, associated with lots of work and requires the capacity to endure because it is important to take responsibility and quite consciously strive to fulfill one's task as a human being and to fathom the understanding of the things in life through effort. So what can we do when we lose the motivation to strive? If the motivation to strive starts to break down, then the human will feel incapable of life. You can start to feel displeased with life. In extreme cases, you can be suicidal. Now, in Contact Report 583, Billy asks the question to Patah, and he says, about that which I would like once to hear your professional view lies in the following question. Can you tell me in short and simple words how stress and physical inactivity, as well as various types of music, affect the life itself, the quality of life, and the life period of the human being? Well, this is interesting because it relates very much to our topic. And it turns out that things like physical inactivity, listening to very unhealthy kinds of music, these are two things that can cause you to feel like you just don't want to strive. Here's what Patah says. He says, as is well known to you, a stressful mode of life can cause you to feel like you don't want to strive, not only due to work overload, but also in every other respect. And a physical movement inactivity can cause you to feel like you don't have motivation to strive. Jealousy, grief, hatred, discord is also things that can have a very bad effect on the body. And these can cause sufferings, which can lead to chronic illnesses, heart problems, even death. And here's what Billy says, very interesting. He says, behind the whole thing, I still very much more like the tremendous noise of present day is arranged with dreadful disharmonic crashing, and he's talking about the music, and bellowing, which is crazily referred to as music, has insanely stupid forms, driving right through one's marrow and bones, and unhinges compulsive depression and unsatisfaction. I think of the, I guess they call it, this real hard kind of hip-hop that exists right now, that really it's a kind of a cross between rap and heavy metal. I think that kind of qualifies as something that can put us in that compulsive depression and unsatisfaction. Without striving, there is no life. Without life, there is no striving. All being is striving, and all striving is being. That which comes forth from striving is truth, knowledge, wisdom, as well as love, peace, harmony, progress, happiness. So it's very critical to keep striving. Striving is a creational natural law. It's related to our evolution. And one of the keys to maintain your happiness, your health, is to continue striving. If you lose the motivation for striving, try going out and getting some exercise, see if that helps. Try listening to some good music, see if that helps. Maybe you're just physically exhausted. Meditate or take a nap. But get back to striving. There is no happiness in life outside of striving. I want to change topic quickly. Again, this is Contact Report 663. Evidently, there would have been a catastrophic global atomic war had Clinton won. And choosing Trump over Clinton avoided a catastrophic global atomic war at this time. Now, I'm a Trump fan. The Meyer Materials is not necessarily a Trump fan, but it's good to hear that in Contact Report 663, they are saying that we avoided a catastrophic global nuclear war by voting for Trump and Clinton. And here's an excerpt from the Contact. It says, "This, in contrast to Clinton, who harbors sneaky and evil warmongering thoughts against Russia and therefore wants to carry out military actions against the Russian military in Syria first, and then also wants to carry out war attacks against Russia itself. A fact in regard to her thoughts of attack, which she, as an enemy of Putin and Russia, has been harboring for a long time, and which she wants to carry out. And if she won the presidential election, then a nuclear war would be unavoidable." So maybe historical trends are slowly changing. And maybe some of the really horrific prophecies that the Meyer Material has talked about are not going to come true. Hi, Gemini. I see Gemini in the chat room there. Looks like she's got a lot of snow. And we've had a little snow here as well. The snowstorms are coming, indeed. Anyway, I'd like to talk a little bit about creational natural laws and directives. Creation, as you know, if you've been listening to this show, is another term for the universal consciousness. The creation is the intelligence which created everything, but the term creation also refers not only to the universal consciousness, but to the structure of the universe. But it's really neither space nor non-space. Creation is not time or beyond time. Creation is pure spirit energy in a conscious form. And there's a difference between creational natural laws and actual recommendations or directives. Let me give you an example. Some recommendations or directives are: you shall not kill in depravity, you shall not steal from others. A creational natural law would be striving. This is another creational natural law. Striving, the law of love, and the law of harmony, which says you should be neutral, positive in your thinking. Those are three creational natural laws: the law of love, the law of harmony, which is your thoughts should be neutral, positive, the creational natural law of striving, and here's another creational natural law: success and advancement will be achieved by pensive thought. Pensive thought is reflecting deep or serious. It's reflection. It's deep, serious thought. And if the law of creation are followed, it will keep us from experiencing harm. So if you are working on something and it's important to you, put in pensive thought. And this is reflection, serious thought, and you're one step closer to success. Okay, let me continue. I'm covering a lot of stuff that's somewhat new for me as well. And I've been talking, I did a show last night with Solaris Blue Raven on, they call that station KCOR, and it's out of Las Vegas. And we did a show on the Meyer material. One of the things that I talked about was the Universal Prophet, who, of course, is Billy Meyer. And each universe will bring forth a Universal Prophet, so who materializes again as a human being in order to help speed up our evolution. Now, evolution is a very important concept, and different living beings have different kinds of evolution. One example of evolution is what's called the consciousness evolution. The human being evolves their consciousness. The plant has, I believe, what's called impulse evolution. Animals have instinct evolution, but they also, certain kinds of higher animals have an intelligence evolution, which is quite interesting to me because I do sense that animals have some intelligence. In all these kinds of evolution, they're normal occurrences, as well as the appearance of the Universal Prophet is a normal occurrence. So this fellow, Nokodamian, is one of the previous personalities of Edward Albert Meyer. He was born on the planet SADR in a galaxy or a star system called Warron, WARON, in the Lyran galaxy about 3 billion light years, almost 4 billion light years from our solar system. And I think Nokodamian was the first incarnated personality that we know of with the same spirit form as Edward Albert Meyer. He's, Nokodamian is called the Unblemished Precious One. He was born about 9.6 billion years ago. And then about 8 billion years ago, we had a man named Henoch, whose name is spelled with a K, who was incarnated again about 8 billion years ago. I don't have the planet. That'd be something maybe I can look up sometime. And here we have something that's still a mystery to me because I think this information has not been translated into English yet. But there was a Semyasa who was born 389,000 years ago when the Lyrians were here. And he fathered what's called the first Adam. And this occurred during the first Atlantis. You know, I've talked about Atlantis. Well, there was two time periods referring to Atlantis. Semyasa II, who operated about 13,000 years ago, fathered the second Adam. And this was the man that we've talked about before during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. That information is mentioned in Contact Report 9. Semyasa was the highest leader of what were called the sub-leaders, who came here from Beta Centauri, the people who worked under Eris the Barbarian. Semyasa mated with a female human being who was still mostly human-like and rather beautiful. She was called an Eva. And my understanding was that the Evas were, in this case, there were certain Evas that were human beings left over from the time of the Lyrians, which I just mentioned, because some of these Lyrians 389,000 years ago committed certain crimes that caused them to be sentenced to a very unusual crime in that they would be left without technology. They couldn't return home with the other Lyrians. They had to stay here on the earth. And they became part of the reincarnational patterns of Earth. So, and that is a partial explanation of why some human beings here on the Earth have 8 to 12 million year old spirit forms, as opposed to 4 million year old spirit forms, which is what most of us have. Anyway, the Eva that Semyasa mated with was very human-like and rather beautiful. I'm speculating she was probably one of the Lyrian descendants, and the offspring Semyasa called Adam which was a word in his language which meant earth human being. And the same kind of breeding occurred again, and then there was a woman. So we had Adam and Eve. We had a first Adam 389,000 years ago in the first Atlantis, and the second Adam about 13,000 years ago in the second Atlantis. And there was two semiosis. Again, this is the Nokedamian lineage. Okay, there have been three Henochs on the earth that were former incarnations of Billy. Henoch 1, 2, and 3. The first one was born 13,500 years ago. I believe this is the Henoch who wrote the Henoch prophecies, which talk about, you know, all the crazy stuff that could occur in our very near future, I believe. The potential civil wars and the breakup of the United States and all these things that we hope don't happen. Henoch also composed a very interesting prayer. And prayer is actually directed in this prayer to the material consciousness. And again, we each have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. I'll review that maybe here in a second. So at that time in the ancient world, they didn't have words for material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. So they just used the word spirit. And one of the, so this whole prayer by Henoch was designed kind of to address his own material consciousness. It's a different way to pray than we think of. But in any case, the consciousness, all our consciousness has to be, we have to take care of it. We have to control our thoughts and our feelings. And we have to make an effort to live inside the creational natural laws, like I was describing before, the creational natural laws striving. In any case, this Henoch, again, this is Henoch the First with a CH. He was born 13,500 years ago. And at that time, the North Pole was situated differently than is the case today. And through cosmic influences and through an upset of the earth, this North Pole became shifted far to the west. And this happened during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. Remember the great asteroid which the Lemurians slammed into the earth in that war against Atlantis. So the central point of the North Pole at that time is identical to the present-day Florida in America. The polar region at the time of Henoch were these wondrous landscapes. They were filled with palms and tropical vegetation. And you can look in Contact Report 39 for more of this kind of information. Also, there's Henoch the Second, who was born about 9,308 years ago. And then Henoch the Third, who was called the Wise Man of Time, the Initiate, who was born about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. So what I'm doing is kind of going through the lineage of the prior personalities of Edward Albert Meyer. In about 891 BC, there was a man named Eliah or Elijah. He was known as the lover of creation. He was also known as J.H.W.H. is my teacher, or Ishwish is my teacher. He had a disciple named Elias. And anyway, Eliah was flown to Srinagar, Kashmir in India on a beam ship around 842 BC. And in Contact Report 230, there are pages on the predictions of the prophet Eliah. And Eliah writes about the future prophet. He writes about Billy. And it says things like, in describing Billy, it says, he will be a seeing and a knowing one, a mediator whose hand writes down the words of those who will come from the stars. He will be the third one to follow me, and he will be continuation. He will be a continuation in the living again of these prophets who were before me as other personalities of me. And the herald will wait for the night on the mountain of the horseshoe, where he will have his homestead, and where a flag will flutter in the wind as a sign of the bond with the human beings from sky. So I guess this is a prediction of Elijah about the Semyase Silver Star Center. The next incarnation of the Meyer personality is someone that we call Isaiah today, who was born in 772 BC. He was known as the one with creational healing, or the one with Ishwish healing. Then there was the man named Jeremiah, who was born in 662 BC. He's known as the one who was raised by the gods. Two more interesting incarnations of Meyer in between Jeremiah and Emmanuel are Socrates in 469 BC and Aristotle in 384 BC. Two great philosophers that affected the world. This is where it gets really interesting, because most of the incarnations of the universal prophet you'll see a lot of times are as a teacher, a prophet, as kind of a spiritual guru, if you will. But here we have two philosophers. Then we have Emmanuel, who is said to be the one with divine knowledge, the one with Ishwish knowledge. Today we call him Jesus, which is kind of unfortunate because, as I've talked about before, the letter J did not exist in the ancient world. For example, the book of Job was originally the book of Iob. All the names that we use the J on, like Joshua, were really Yeshua. The name Jesus in the very first King James, the 1611, in the original printing, not in the ones that come out today, of course, that say they're 1611s, but in ones that were really printed then, it says the Lord and Savior, I-E-S-V-S. And that's because there was no J in the ancient world, in any languages except in the Illyrian. And it's quite interesting that right around 1600, they went and changed these quote-unquote sacred scriptures so it was easier for them to pronounce some of these names. For example, the names for James and John are very difficult to pronounce. I can't pronounce them correctly whatsoever. But they went in and changed the names of James and John to James and John. Previously, their names began with the letter Y. Jesus was how it was pronounced from the Latin. So in any case, that's just information about the name. I haven't been able to trace evidence for the name Emmanuel except in the Old Testament in the book of Isaiah. In any case, I won't belabor that any longer. Muhammad was born in 571 AD. That's a whole area of study we could go into, too. You could spend weeks and weeks on Emmanuel, weeks and weeks on Muhammad. The next incarnation was in 1480 AD of a man named Johann Georg Faust, one of the previous personalities of Edward Albert Meyer. He was an alchemist, an astrologer, a magician. Galileo Galilei in 1564 AD, an individual who drastically affected our perception of the universe. No longer would we think of the Earth as the center of the solar system, the center of the universe. Two interesting incarnations of the Meyer spirit form as musicians, Mozart and Mendelssohn. Not spiritual teachers, but still helping people's evolution through music, which is also very interesting. The next incarnation of the Meyer spirit form was a guy named Rasputin, who was born in 1869, a Russian peasant. He was a mystical faith healer. He was not one that had lax morals. A lot of historical information is wrong about that. He wasn't a wild person. He was married. He had a family. He was an itinerant monk, an itinerant preacher, so he kind of traveled around. He helped to heal people through suggestive influence. He would get people to heal themselves through the power of their own subconscious and unconscious thoughts. You've heard Billy talk about that before. Of course, we know Billy, who was born in 1937. The name Billy means protector. Edward means guardian of the treasure. Albert means the shining one. Meyer means the supervisor of practicing the respected, the higher standing. In the Meyer information, he's called the prophet of the new time. If you haven't heard the show before, Billy lives in Hinterschmidruti, which is about 52 minutes east of Zurich, in a tiny mountain village. He has a building there called the Semyase Silver Star Center. It's located in a very green forested area. Billy grew up in northern Switzerland, in Bulac, Switzerland, where he started to have his contacts with a man named Svath. He had 11 years of contacts with Svath, and then 11 more years of contacts with a woman named Askit from the Tao universe, a sister universe to ours that was created some 46 trillion years ago. Her people are called the Timmers. The people of Svath are called the Plear, and the Timmers now live in this parallel universe called the Tao universe. The Plearen live some 40 light years from our Pleiades. That's about 500 light years from Earth. But in a different space-time configuration, the Plearen have lived on Earth in the past. They have connections with the Earth people. And they knew that Billy would be a teacher. They knew that he was incarnating as a teacher, as did other extraterrestrial human races. So they set up these two mentors for him. One was Svath, the first 11 years from about 5 years old to about 16 or something like that. I think it was in 1953 that Billy was picked up on a hill in Switzerland by a robotic craft. And in the contact report, Billy describes climbing up the hill and feeling hot and sweating, even though it was very cold outside. The craft came out of the sky and looked like a falling star somewhat, and slowly landed on these very strange landing pods. And Billy walked over to the craft. He was pulled inside by some kind of technology. He could see that nothing else in there except a seat. It was a robotic craft. He sat down, and there was a great flash of light. He held his eyes up to, or hands up to kind of protect his face. And when he looked down, he couldn't see any ship. It almost was as if he was flying himself. But what had happened is the ship became invisible. He also noticed he couldn't see his own hand. Slowly the ship went over his village, where it hovered for a while over his home, just a few feet above his house, and then it sped off and landed in the Middle East in Jordan. Billy got to meet Askit for the first time. They went inside far below the Great Pyramid, and they saw artifacts that were perfect replicas of the crucifixion of the cross. They saw a perfect replica of the cross. They saw the inner workings of the headquarters of the Giza intelligences. Billy saw a crown of thorns and a blood-encrusted nail. He was very troubled. He had great cognitive dissonance over this experience. They both left, and Semyase explained to him that they had seen the headquarters of a group of negative terrestrial humans that, for the longest time, worked to gain control of the people of Earth. One of the things they have used is religion to do that. And I've talked about the Befath, the Giza intelligences, at great length. Billy met with Askit for 11 years, and then he had 11 years of somewhat normal life. where I think he probably processed all the information that he had learned over the previous 22 years. He had some time to reflect on it. And I think he also had abilities to pull information out of the universal storage banks. His contacts with Semyase picked up in about 1975. That's when he took his over 1,200 photographs of the player and ships. He got the metal samples, which he sent to Marcel Vogel, who verified that they were off-world technology through micro-machining. It had evidence of micro-machining and other alloys that were not of this earth. Colonel Wendell Stevens brought the investigation teams over that verified the authenticity of the photographs, the sound recordings. Billy was given a lie detector test, which he passed. There were some 100 other people who also saw these ships. Very interesting story in any case. I'm going to move on a little bit. I want to talk a bit about a very important concept called the occult powers in meditation. So we are actually able to create, so to speak, create spirits, Wesenheiten, that come to our life through the power of our own thoughts. Now, the term Wesenheiten is a non-translatable German term. It is a German word for an immaterial or material form of existence without a self-determining possibility of evolution. That means the universal consciousness doesn't really have a free will in terms of its own evolution. It evolves according to some fixed patterns. Marianne from Switzerland talked about how the creation of these spirit forms isn't direct. It's more like a child is the product of sex. We don't actually create a child. These spirits, these occult spirits, can come through wrong meditation. When a meditating human being imagines things, sometimes you can do this when you're imagining help. Some people that believe in angels talk to them, it's the same. Or when believers tell you they're in contact with a God and that the God answers. My information said the angels and God doesn't exist. But we can create these Wesenheiten. They have the ability to communicate to us in the voices of people that have passed away. Very interesting. Billy says that create is not the right word. The human being in question kind of prepares or makes the spirit in the occult sense. Billy said the human being prepares the process. He or she doesn't create the spirit. It's like the man who prepares the sperm. You know, he doesn't create the child, but he starts the whole process. The rest happens in the woman's body according to creational laws. Perhaps something similar happens when these spirit forms are created. Another thing that's interesting is, I mentioned this earlier, this idea of us creating a we form in the material subconsciousness here on the earth. I believe this comes from the Goblet of Truth. Let me go ahead and read this. Consider you as humankind of earth are a we form, and as such are connected more or less with one another through your thoughts and feelings, as well as through your subconsciousness. And as you nourish and cherish negative or positive thoughts and feelings, so they strengthen themselves. Once you call them forth, and in the strengthening, they can strike any of your fellow human beings, through which they awake something resting in them. They bring to their course effect, although they never had previously thought about bringing it out and realizing it. Therefore, you comprehensively bear the responsibility for your thoughts and feelings, also for your fellow human beings, at least those who are influenced through your mental and feeling-based impulsations, and therefore carry out corresponding deeds or call forth thoughts and feelings in themselves of the same kind. So many of your fellow human beings very often have thoughts and feelings in them or carry out actions in their origin which lead back to you, and that through the strengthening take effect in the others and call forth the corresponding reactions, which they themselves reject and condemn, although they, like you, are also jointly responsible for them in accordance with the creational laws and recommendations. So I guess our thoughts affect others, even if, you know, I don't think we would even have to talk to them necessarily. Let me continue here. Because they nonetheless act from out of themselves with foreign thoughts and feelings that are striking them. And thus, you can have thoughts and feelings for anything in you that you would never carry out into deeds. However, the fellow human being who has been struck by your thoughts and the feelings, who is not able to work them out and bring them under control, may carry these thoughts out. So if you have some horrifically negative thought about, I don't know, hurting someone or something, you may never do it, but your thoughts may contribute to someone else doing something like that. They may be struck by your thoughts, which is a profound thought, the responsibility that we have in our own thinking. You know, Billy talks about the might of our thoughts, that good thoughts lead to good feelings lead to good habits lead to good circumstances in your life, and that mostly our thoughts produce the circumstances that are in our life. And one of the things that we have to be continually aware of is when an imbalance occurs in our thoughts. And an imbalance is when we're not neutral. We need to be neutral positive in our thoughts all the time. So we have to be constantly looking at our thoughts. And it's the same way with nature. For example, a tree has to be in balance between the roots that grow into the ground and to the crown of the tree, which we can see. If there's an imbalance in that growth, the tree tends to fall over. So we need to be continually looking at our own thinking to verify that we have the balance between the negative and the positive. You know, Elizabeth Moosberger, who was the wife of Guido Moosberger, I believe, said that the book, The Might of Thoughts, was dedicated to a humankind that's ill in its consciousness. And I think we are ill in our consciousness. And I think that became very apparent during the current election. You know, we're kind of a divided nation right now. We have great illness in our consciousness. And, you know, one thing that really stuck in my mind that Billy has always said is that the evolution of the consciousness only comes about when the human being has independent thinking. Well, the mainstream media, the CNN, the MSNBCs of the world, they do not encourage independent thinking. In fact, they have a horrific way of brainwashing people. And be very, very aware of that. I would recommend nobody to watch these mainstream media outlets anymore. Because they are stifling independent thinking. And what does it say? What does it say in the Might of Thoughts? It says, thinking is more and more stunted on our planet because we live in a consumer society in which everything is pre-chewed to an excessive degree by television, radio, newspapers, magazines, and books. So we don't have to think for ourselves anymore at all. People just align themselves with what's being presented from mainstream media. So the great mass, as Billy says, there are only a few who really have their own thoughts about that which they hear, see, read, feel, and perceive. Let me emphasize this to you. Please do not be one of the non-thinking masses, because our survival as a nation depends on our independent thinking. Today we're told how we should think. We're told by the media, by the churches, by various kinds of organizations, how we should think. Evolution is any process of formation of growth, development. The evolution, it can be a gradual process, a peaceful, progressive change. For example, in the Talmud of Emmanuel, we hear about logic, and we hear about the importance of logic. But the word logic was, according to my information, omitted from the book of Matthew and from other parts of the New Testament because the church leaders didn't want people thinking independently, didn't want them to use logic. And in the Might of Thoughts, it explains how faith short circuits logic. And here is something Billy said, or something Askew said to Billy about thinking independently. And she said that the human, the earth human, is still not capable of coping with and fully understanding the truth. He is not yet mature enough to know his future and approach it correctly. For that reason, the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him, as in equations, in order to make him think independently, whereby he slowly finds and recognizes the truth for himself. A sartung means to get very bad out of control of the good human nature. Our negative thinking, our unbalanced thinking, can lead to this asartung. Our neutral positive thinking will repair our psyche. And one of the ways we can repair our psyche is to nurture what are called wish dreams, kind of happy, blissful, kind of neutral, positive scenes in our mind. A plant sprouts from a seed and therefore cannot come into existence without it. So if you have a kind of a neutral positive wish dream, that thought, that wish can spout itself into reality. So what is, I've mentioned this before, we have a psyche which controls the material consciousness. It's a blocker factor that controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. We have something called the Gemut, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. So we have these two aspects of the human being. Your material consciousness only exists for this particular one lifetime. What goes into the spiritual realm will be still processed. So I guess it exists for a while in the spiritual realm as well, while it's being processed by the spirit form, and while it's being processed by the overall consciousness block. So it says in the Might of Thoughts that the human being must make the effort to clarify his thoughts so that they become more valuable, purposes, and productive. And they form a life that is more harmonious and equalized. Yet everything needs patience and practice, as well as effort, because only thereby can the door to real knowledge be found and opened. So we have to have clarification of our thoughts. We have to put effort into this. We have to practice it. We have to use it. Be patient with this. And that can lead to a harmonious life. To clarify means to make less confused and more clearly comprehensible. To clarify means to make clear, to make easier to understand, to clear the confusion, the uncertainty. To clarify means to make an idea more intelligible, to free it from ambiguity. The word confusion means a lack of understanding, an uncertainty. Confusion comes from a Latin word, which means to pour together, to mingle together. So when there's confusion, the boundary between things are lost, and the distinction between things are lost. Our thoughts become more purposeful when the boundaries are clear and we understand our purpose, our intention, when our thoughts are clarified. Clarification of thoughts can help by repetition, and we should practice clarifying our thoughts. And the Meyer analogy is when a human being starts a garden, it's certain that some form of the plant will be produced in it, regardless of whether the piece of land is cultivated or it's neglected. But our consciousness is like a garden, and if we don't correctly maintain it, then we get these wildly growing negative thoughts. They kind of pull the energy out of you. They pull the life out of you. They have a confusing and destructive effect. And they're weeds. You need to pull them up. Once animated, these thoughts can be animated and they develop their own life, just like plants. The human being then reaps sweet or bitter fruits, depending on what kind of thoughts he's had. When a human being starts a garden, again, we know that some form of plant will come out of it. And negative thoughts, if you allow negative thoughts to grow in your consciousness, they will proliferate like wildly growing weeds, which will displace everything. And one of the best things to do if you're having weeds in your thinking and they're displacing everything, one of the most important things to do is striving, work. Work will put you back in a neutral, positive thought very quickly if you can just focus yourself wholly on your work. If you stay in negative thoughts, they will repeat. And negative people can only see black. And their perception is very limited. And their world of thoughts will fall prey to this limitation. And their thoughts will be in a narrow framework, which is limited. And you'll have negative perception. The thoughts are thereby forced into a cycle in which the same thoughts and themes of thoughts appear over and over again, whereby a rotation of the thoughts is practically called forth. I have been there. I'm sure some of us have. Some of the listeners have too. When you have thoughts that literally, they take on their own life, they appear, They're rotating, they're repeating. That will rob all your mental power. That will actually negatively affect your health. And you can get where you can barely free yourself from these negatively repeating thoughts. And it will impair your ability for perception. And in extreme cases, a delusional state can occur. And you can start to blur the delusional state and a normal state. And a person can become mad this way. Every human being can fall prey at any time to insanity, to delusion, to a psychical disorder or a psychological illness. So that's why we have to continue to focus on neutral thinking. Consequently, the human being is shaken if they're having non-neutral thoughts. The human being is shaken and knocked about by the circumstances of life. And you shouldn't think of yourself as a person that is hung up in the negative thinking. You don't have to be. And hi, Eve. I see Eve has joined us in the chat room. So the negative repeating thoughts are extremely dangerous. So a circumstance is the existing conditions or state of affairs surrounding someone. Examples of conditions could be health, societal position. But you are the Lord and Master of your entire life. Every human being is the Lord and Master of their entire life. That which you think you make real, good and positive thoughts, must be tended and they must be nurtured. The human being should have a good, positive opinion of himself. And this good, positive opinion of himself is part of the concept of fulfilling your duty to yourself. And so always care for the best health of your body and your psyche. Do not disregard also the health of your consciousness. And part of the health of your consciousness is continually challenging your consciousness by learning, continually striving to learn. And you also should challenge your body. That means you should be out and trying to get exercise. Things get in the way of exercise. Believe me, if you don't get the physical activity, it can make you lose your sense of life and you'll lose your sense of striving. Here's another hole that we've all fallen into. If you devote yourself to passions of any kind, to vices, to addictions, then you will live a life like a person smoldering in the desert, dying of thirst. Part of the improper use of striving can also lead to suicidal thoughts. So your duty to yourself is very important. And you should never be despairing. You should never be in bad temper. And you should always be your very best friend. There's nothing in the whole universe that is not connected with fulfilling of your duty to yourself. So always be your best friend. Boy, we have run out of time. I don't know how that happened so quickly. Anyway, folks, I hope to talk to you this week. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And I think we'll be talking with Gary King before too long. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.